I'm only trying to help, freak. 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 Age 10. Mom bought us the newest PlayStation for Christmas, plus a discounted X-Men game, because she had a little extra money left over. We're playing, and Eric chooses Wolverine, because he likes playing as the main characters. He calls himself a one-man army, since he's always good with them. I choose Jean Grey, because she can transform into Dark Phoenix and becomes extra powerful. She has this really cool flight and fire trick I saw in the video's game demo at the store. Stop choosing the girl characters. Be a boy. I choose Cyclops instead. Age 11. The superintendent brings his wrench out at 11 a.m., like every summer, and jerks open the fire hydrant. Jets of water blast free, and some kids stop to take off their shirts while others charge straight in to cool down. Brendan takes his shirt off. He's been my best friend since first grade, and I see him all the time, but I don't stop looking at him. Until baby Freddy tells me we're playing tag, and I'm it. I only chase after Brendan, like a magnet. When I finally catch him, I tag him on his bare shoulder, and my hand stays there a little longer than it needs to. Brendan finally comes back from visiting his family in North Carolina this weekend, and I'm so excited. While he was gone, I really got into comic books to pass the time that would have been spent playing with him. I even draw one just for him. It's a Pokemon comic with its pictures colored in by pens. There are a lot of eraser streaks from my outlining stage, but he won't care. It's about Brendan becoming a Pokemon master and shows how unstoppable he is throughout all his gym battles. I hope he likes it. Age 12. Mrs. Olivia taught the class about Shakespeare and all his plays today. I'm on the couch next to Dad while he watches basketball with Eric. The game is really boring. Since learning about theater and our school's drama club, I want to become an actor who will star in really cool action movies like Scorpius Hawthorne with sword fights and magical battles. I would rather watch movies than a bunch of sweaty guys trying to put a ball through a hoop so I can study how to be an actor, especially since so much has changed since Shakespeare was alive. If he was ever really alive, I think he might be made up, like Santa and Jesus, but grown-ups tell you he's real. Dad, did you know that men used to play the roles of women in Shakespeare's plays? That's pretty funny, right? Dad turns away from the game for the first time all night. You're a boy, he says. Don't ever act like a girl. Age 13. Brendan runs up to me. Yo, I just got my first blowjob. I get a little heated. I'm just surprised, you know. Whoa, awesome. From who? Some girl who's friends with Kenneth and Kyle. She thinks Kyle is cuter because he's coming into his mustache, but I talked a good game and got her into my pants. I am a god. I pat his back. Good job, dude. Good job. Brendan sees baby Freddy coming out of our building with his baseball equipment. Hold up, let me go tell that little shit. Brendan runs off, and I feel a little sick. Age 15. There's definitely something going on between us. We spend all of Earth science passing illustrated notes back and forth instead of listening to Ms. O mispronounce minerals with her thick Puerto Rican accent. We always come up with bullshit excuses to keep hanging out after school. We trade stories at this pretty cool chicken spot. We go to the movies and throw candy and chocolate into our buckets of popcorn. We rest our arms next to each other's. Mostly, we play around a lot in the park. Just the two of us, like a secret. A secret we suck at hiding because everyone already suspects we're dating. But I'm still pretty damn shocked when I hear, "You should be my boyfriend." I gotta admit, I thought I was doomed to a life of hookups like Brendan and Skinny Dave, or more like baby Freddy who always chases and never catches anything. I never thought someone would give me the hand-holding treatment. This must mean that I was wrong about everything I thought about myself. I scoot a little closer to Genevieve on the park bench. I squeeze her hand and say, "Sure, I'll give being your boyfriend a shot." I don't understand. It all felt so right in that moment I agreed to date her. I was the straightest guy I knew. But when I got home that night, I was still thinking about other guys. Not Brendan anymore. I got turned off from him after hearing him talk about sleeping with girls as conquests. No. I think about the dudes I see undress in the locker room at school. The ones sitting across from me on the bus, staring at nothing, and likely thinking about their normal crushes. I don't think about Genevieve. She's staring up at me now, like I'm all she thinks about, like I should be inching toward her lips, as she is mine. I go for it to prove myself wrong. I turn at the last second, and we bump heads. "Ow!" Genevieve laughs. "Watch it, dumb idiot." "Sorry." I rub my forehead.
"Take two?"
I nod, and she jokingly backs away, as if she were in danger of another headbutt. She pulls me toward her, and when she turns left, I freak out and turn left too, and we hit each other again. Maybe this time she'll take it as a message from the universe that I'm the wrong boy to be kissing. I know I can't possibly be fooling her, or anyone, and that's my problem. Without her, I definitely won't be fooling anyone. I pull her to me, and this time I get it right. And when it's done, I laugh, which probably wouldn't make anyone feel good. But Genevieve smiles, and then punches me in the arm. I suspect I'll be hitting you a lot. Age 16. October. 9 months ago. I'm in the school library, rereading Scorpius Hawthorne in The Legion of the Dragon, when I catch him looking at me from the fantasy section. Colin Vaughn is another junior, and he's what I like to call an almost jock. He hasn't been able to get on the basketball team since freshman year, but acts superior anyway during gym class. Colin walks over with two books and pulls out the chair across from me. "Cool if I sit?"
"Cool,"
I say. "I see you reading these fantasy books and comics a lot during class and lunch." His brown eyes wander to my Scorpius Hawthorne book. "Are these any good?" He slides over The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and The Hobbit. "Hitchhiker's Guide is really fucking funny," I say. The librarian rolls her eyes at me before returning to her trashy-looking romance novel. "I haven't read The Hobbit, but the movies are epic," I add. He knocks on the Scorpius Hawthorne book. "Huh. I haven't read these books, but so the movies." Some people are obsessed with the works of Jane Austen or William Shakespeare or Stephen King, but I grew up with the demonic boy wizard. So whenever someone my age tells me they haven't read these books, I imagine a reaping spell being fired into the sky because a childhood is dead. "Why the hell not?" Colin smiles. "Never got around to them." "But you willingly walked into those movie theaters and kicked your feet up?"
"Aren't they the same thing?"
"You were the worst," I tell him. "If I bring you the first Scorpius Hawthorne book tomorrow, will you read it this weekend?"
"I'll give it a shot."
"Meet back here tomorrow?" "We'll keep meeting back here until you can recite the 7 laws of hybrid magic." I'm acting like I'm reading the final pages of Legion of the Dragon when Colin comes into the library looking for me. He sits right across from me, not asking this time, and says,
"You got the goods?"
It's a tone someone might mistake for drug dealing. I slide the backpack over to him. I packed the first 2 Scorpius Hawthorne books, plus The Once and Future King, A Game of Thrones, and a couple comics in case he's in the insanely minuscule percentage of the universe that doesn't like the demonic boy wizard who inspired a fucking amusement park and 7 films. I tossed in some classics, too. What got you into fantasy? Colin opens the backpack and opens the first page of Scorpius Hawthorne and the Monster Scepter. If this Leteo Institute weren't bullshit and I could get a free procedure, I would definitely have my memory of ever reading this series buried so I could relive these books again for the first time.
I like pretending, I guess.
The pages are yellowed, and he sees my illustration of the horned Alistair Riggs, the overlord of the Silver Crown School.
You draw?
Yeah, it's a thing I do, I say. I normally don't think I'm an awesome artist, because one should always exhibit some modesty, but Colin studies my drawings like he would bid high for them in one of our dumb school auctions. You should be honored I'm loaning you my original and sacred copies, but I should warn you that I will destroy you like a bone grinder if you ruin them.
I actually get that reference, Colin says, and it makes me feel like there's still hope for him.
Those are the trolls from the first movie, right?
He just compared a skinless demon to a dumb troll.
Hope killed. A couple of weeks later, Colin hands me back my copy of Scorpius Hawthorne and the Hollows, the final book in the series. Inside is a note asking me to check yes or no without a question. But I know what he's talking about, and it doesn't scare me like I thought it would if this day ever came. I check yes and slide it back across the table. Colin reads it, folds the paper into his front pocket, nods, and says,
"Cool."
After school, there's a basketball game, and I tell Genevieve I'm going to hang back and watch it. She thought it was weird, but wasn't too bothered by it because it gave her a little extra time to focus on her homework without me calling to distract her. Colin told his girlfriend Nicole that he wanted to see if any of the players who made the cut are actually worth anything.
But we don't watch the game.
I chase him up the staircase to the top floor, and, out of breath, I ask him, "Why me? And don't try and shrug your way out of this one, or tell me I'm cool." He shrugs. I fake going downstairs. He grabs my arm.
"Because I could tell you were different without it being obvious to everyone else you were different, okay? Someone would have to sit down and get to know you to actually figure it out, if that makes sense. And I like what I've seen so far."
"That do it for you?"
"Sure. Even if that speech was a bit much."
"Asshole.
Your turn."
"Why me?"
I shrug, get in his face, and tell him he's cool. We both look downstairs at the same time to make sure no one's coming up, and then we turn and kiss.
Age 16, November, 8 months ago. "I'm teaching you how to ride a bike," Colin says as he wheels over a beat-up 10-speed with a popped chain toward me. "You're 16 and officially 10 years too old to wait around for your daddy to teach you." He kneels over and fixes the chain. I can see the skin of his lower back.
"Maybe I'm too old to learn."
"No.
You'll never get a driver's license if you can't even ride a bike. Come on. You can act like it's Scorpius's broom, the red sprite, right?"
"Sold." I get on, and Colin tells me the basics. I expect him to hold my back or my shoulder, but we're in his neighborhood, and his friends are around. I pedal and fall over, almost banging my head into a fire hydrant. He extends his hand to me and asks,
"Any chance I'm forgetting a broom with training wheels?"
Colin has already lost both of his virginities. He got it on with this girl Surya when he was 14, after she gave him a hand job under the bleachers in the gym. Then he let this guy plow him last year when he was vacationing in the Poconos. I still have both of my virginities to lose. I've only gotten as far as groping with Genevieve. I want to take it to the next level with Colin. We recently tried doing it in the nearby building staircase, but didn't get very far undressing ourselves before we heard someone coming down. The same deal with this abandoned porch up on the balcony a few nights ago, which was really risky, but worth risking, I think. We ventured far away from my block and stumble onto a hiding space behind a wired fence, in between a meat market and a flower shop. Businesses of death and life. "It smells like dead cow," I say. "But kind of nice, too. Weird." "Jesus! Do you want me to go get you a flower?" Colin asks, flipping me off. We always flip each other off because it's how we remain guys, you know? Colin steps over a rusty bike without wheels, leaving me to wonder the next time he'll try and teach me how to ride a bike. And he wrenches the bottom of the fence until it folds back enough for us to crawl through. It's dark out, and we're so far away from our friends on the block and our girlfriends at home. I bet the fucking moon can't even see us right now. I shove him, and he shoves me back. I tackle him against the wall, unbuttoning his shirt, and it's all condoms and awkward memories from there. It's chillier today, so we can't have sex when we go to our spot. We decide to leave a physical mark instead. I borrowed some cans of spray paint from Genevieve she had, left over from an assignment a year ago. I was happy as hell when Colin agreed to this, because it meant we shared something beyond sex. Colin sprays a black and blue world onto the dirty wall. I hear police sirens, so I have to think quickly in case they're coming for us. I streak a green arrow over the world. It looks like the universal icon for boys, which makes sense, because we're men, no matter what we do together. Colin adds a crown, and makes us kings. The sirens fade into the distance, so we hang around and keep decorating, for lack of a straighter word. He sprays some weird, shapeless creature on the other wall.
"Hey, can I borrow a kiss?"
"Nah."
"Okay, let's try this again. Kiss me or I'll spray you," Colin threatens.
I smile. I walk toward him and he aims the can at me.
"Don't fucking do it, Colin Vaughn."
I back up and a spray of blue hits me in the chest.
"You motherfucker!"
I pick up a can and spray green all over his back while he runs around. The war goes on for 10 minutes until we're both covered in blue and green and black, and I have no idea how I'll even begin to explain this to my parents. Age 16. December. 7 months ago. Kenneth was fucking gunned down yesterday, and it's all Kyle's fucking fault. Kyle couldn't fucking help himself and just had to fucking fuck Jordan's fucking sister, even though we all fucking knew Jordan is the kind of fucking guy who would fucking kill someone if you fucking crossed him. Those bullets were fucking meant for fucking Kyle, but no, they fucking found their way into fucking Kenneth when he was fucking innocently coming home from his fucking clarinet lessons at school. We will never get the fucking chance to see Kenneth on a fucking stage, playing us a song we would fucking call him a little bitch for, even if we are so fucking proud of him for fucking making something of himself. Thankfully, I have Colin here. He is being a real fucking champ and letting me cry into his chest. He promises distractions, like movies and comics, but the best fucking distraction of all is having someone who will hold me whenever I'm fucking lost and defeated. Colin and I were pumped to see the new Avengers movie together. Until our girlfriends invited themselves to join us. But like good boyfriends, we let them tag along. Genevieve fought to sit next to Nicole so they could swoon and stuff over Robert Downey Jr., but Colin argued this was a dude's movie and the dudes should get to sit next to each other. Colin even faked jealousy over them wanting to talk about other guys. Crazy. An hour into the movie, I reach for a handful of popcorn from the bucket on Colin's lap, slyly brushing his arm. I think pretty little of myself for being such a dick with Genevieve directly to my left, and even when she's far away. But Colin makes me happy. And that's that.
Best
fucking movie ever, Colin whispers to me, pressing his lips against my ear for a second. This double date is kind of a turn-on, but there's a big hole here. We won't go home with each other. I've seen better, I whisper back. The hell you have. I punch his arm and elbow him. Tip, your girlfriends won't suspect you're sleeping with your guy friend if you're hitting them. Get a room, Nicole hisses after some popcorn flies on her. Or maybe they will. Genevieve calls my name right as Colin leans in to whisper something else to me, and I turn to him. I laugh at his dumb joke about a monkey and a dragon in a bar, pissing off others in the theater. Genevieve included, probably. I want to ask her what's up, but I can't expose myself for ignoring her in favor of my undercover boyfriend, or whatever we are. So instead, I lean in on her and whisper, I cannot wait for later tonight, Jen. Genevieve pulls my belt and drags me to the edge of her bed. Her father is out of town until tomorrow, for a reason I can't remember, and it's obvious what her intentions were after the double date. If I want to keep what I have with Colin, I have to play along so she doesn't get suspicious. She climbs onto her bed and relaxes on her knees, pausing in front of my face. You want this, right? I should tell her something like, not really, and just walk away and call up Colin. Instead, I grab her shoulders and pull her to me, kissing her neck, face, and lips. You're beautiful, I whisper right into her ear. These seem like all the right things to do. She takes off my shirt and throws it across the room. Unbutton my shirt, she says, tracing circles into my chest with her fingers. Every time I rip a button off, she breathes this low moan that seems artificial, but it's crazy to think we're both faking our way through this. I drop her shirt, and we study each other's bodies. She's in a green bra she probably bought for tonight, while I'm in the same boxers as yesterday. Genevieve falls to her back and turns off her bedside lamp. Come here. Hopefully, the moonlight doesn't expose the dread on my face that I'm disguising with suggestive eyebrow bounces and smirks as I crawl toward her. I grip her waist, and before I can kiss her, I slap a hand on my bare stomach and groan, I feel like I might puke. I think it was the popcorn. Too much butter. This sensual Genevieve that confuses me switches off, and the real Genevieve is back. Do you want me to get you something from the kitchen? I have some ginger ale and bread. I think I should try and sleep it off. That usually does the trick. Okay, but... Babe, are you sure you don't want to stay awake and see if it passes? Tonight's the only night we can finally do this until who knows when. I know. I want to do this, but... Whatever lie that follows doesn't matter, because I already told her the truth for once. I don't want to do this. Age 16. January. 6 months ago. This was a bit of a shock, but Colin got me something for Christmas. A $20 gift card to Comic Book Asylum. I've been begging Mohad, the big boss man at Good Foods, for a job, and he said he might need a cashier soon. I did a few chores for Dad, like washing his car and running out to get him sandwiches from Joey's, and he gave me $15 to buy something nice for Genevieve. But I didn't spend it on her. Okay, I spent $4 on a blank pad and created a flipbook for her, but I spent the rest of it on two copies of The Dark Alternates, issue number 1, for Colin and me. It's the start of a new Marvel series where all the heroes are combating their dark counterparts in a medieval landscape of fiery storms and dead warriors. We read them both in his hallway the day after Christmas. I go to Comic Book Asylum when they reopen for business on January 2. I head straight to the counter before I'm tempted to spend the gift card on some comics I'll never find in the dollar cart. I catch up with Stan about his holidays and then ask, Could I get a monthly subscription for the Dark Alternates?
Have you read the first yet? It's epic, bro. When the tornado destroyed their headquarters, I lost my head.
That was my friend's favorite part, too, I say. He rings me up for the New Year's promo, and it comes out to $24. I use up the entire gift card and pay the difference.
So, there are 7 issues, right?
The magic number. Once a month.
I have 6 more comics to read with Colin. Awesome. I've been throwing myself into a new project lately to distract myself from several things, like Kenneth's death, Kyle's distance from all of us, and my guilt over playing Genevieve. It's a comic book about a hero I've made up, Sun Warden. I once had this dream where I was so hungry I ate the sun and my bones were really hot, but I didn't blow up or melt or anything like that. Seemed like a decent enough idea. I think once I finish the comic, I'm going to give it to Colin as a gift.
Age 16. February. 5 months ago.
Aaron, you can tell me anything.
I'm sitting across from Mom in her bedroom, and my heart is pounding like crazy.
Since you were a kid, I've told you this. Remember when you didn't want to tell me that...
I like guys, Mom.
I spit out the words. I stare at dirty laundry on the floor.
Sorry, I just...
Yeah. She steps to me and lifts my chin, but I still don't look at her.
Baby, there's nothing to be sorry about.
I've... you know, lied and been a dick, I say. She holds my hand, and I almost start crying what Colin would call little bitch tears, because guys don't cry. I can go stay somewhere, I don't know where, but somewhere if...
Aaron Soto, you are going nowhere.
Not until college. Then you get your ass out of here, graduate, get a job, and pay me back all the money I've spent on you since giving birth. She smiles, and I force a smile back.
So what? You going to tell me you always knew or something like that?
I'm better than that, my son.
Thanks. I owe you one.
You owe me about $1 million, but that's beside the point.
I'm happy you're ready, and you seem okay with it.
That's always been my biggest worry, that you wouldn't understand it.
I know what she means.
I've been hanging out less with Brendan and my friends, and they've seen me crossing the street to meet with Colin. He does come over and hang sometimes, but I try to keep Colin all to myself for the most part. I just know they won't be so accepting of what we're doing, and everyone's mood has been off since we lost Kenneth.
Is there a young gentleman in your life?
Mom asks.
Yeah. But I bet you're playing dumb and already know it's Colin.
I talk about him enough. When someone makes you happy, it's pretty impossible to cage the excitement. She sits down beside me on the bed, where we all slept together until I was 13, before I moved out into the living room with Eric to sleep in our own beds.
Do you have a photo?
I'm 16, no shit I have a photo.
I scroll through my phone's photo album with Mom looking over my shoulders. We slide past a picture of me with Genevieve.
So, I take it you and Genevieve aren't actually dating then, are you?
Telling Mom was one thing. Telling Dad is another. He's in the living room, smoking, and watching what he claims is a very important Yankees game. It's in the 9th inning, and the teams are tied. I consider backing out, maybe waiting another week or so, but maybe he won't actually care when I tell him. Maybe all that stuff he said when I was younger, about never acting like a girl or playing with any female action figures, will go away once he realizes I am the way I am without any choice. Maybe he'll accept me.
Mom follows me into the living room and sits down on Eric's bed.
Mark, do you have a minute? Aaron has something he wants to talk about.
He exhales cigarette smoke.
I'm listening.
He never looks away from the game. Forget it. We can do it another time. I turn around to go back into my parents' room, but Mom catches my hand.
She knows I may never feel ready to do this, that I may keep finding excuses to push this off until long after my dad is gone, and then maybe I'll go to his grave and come out. But the time has to be now, so I can feel as comfortable in my home as I am chilling with Colin.
Mark, Mom says again.
His eyes are still on the TV. I take a deep breath.
Dad, I hope you're cool with this. But I sort of, kind of am dating someone, and
I can already see him getting confused, like I'm challenging him to solve an algebraic equation with no pen, paper, or calculator.
And that someone is my friend Colin.
Only then does Dad turn toward us. His face immediately goes from confused to furious.
You would think the Yankees not only lost the game, but also decided to give up and retire the team forever.
He points his cigarette at Mom.
This is all your doing. You have to be the one to tell him he's wrong.
He's talking about me like I'm not even in the room.
Mark, we always said we would love our kids no matter what, and
empty fucking promise, Elsie. Make him cut it out or get him out of here.
If there's something about homosexuality you don't understand, you can talk to your son about it in a kind way,
Mom says, maintaining a steady tone that's both fearless for me and respectful toward Dad.
We all know what he's capable of.
If you want to ignore it or need time, we can give that to you. But Aaron isn't going anywhere.
Dad places his cigarette in the ashtray and then kicks over the hamper he was resting his feet on. We back up.
I don't often wish this, but I really, really wish Eric were here right now in case this gets as ugly as I think it might.
He points his finger at me. I'll fucking throw him out myself.
My mom guards me.
Dad wraps his big hands around her throat, shaking her.
Huh? You still think he's making the right choice?
I run over, grab his TV remote, and hit him so hard in the back of his head with it that the batteries pop out. He shoves my mom into the intercom phone, and she falls to the floor, desperately trying to catch her breath. Before I can check on her, my dad, the man who fucking played catch with me, punches me in the back of my head, and I crash into a tower of Eric's used games. He drags me by my shirt collar and leaves me outside the apartment door.
I'll be damned if I'm alive the day you bring a boy home, you fucking faggot.
I hear the door lock, and I cry harder than I ever have in my entire life because I can't change the way I am, not as fast and as easily as my father just stopped being Dad. Last night, I was left out in the hallway banging on the door for over an hour. I didn't want my father to strangle or beat me to death, but I was so scared for my mom. With all my freaking out, someone called the cops. When they knocked on the door, my father opened up and simply left with them. He didn't even look at me as they handcuffed him and read him his rights. Mom went to the hospital to make sure she was okay. It's absolutely the worst nightmare stored in my memory bank. I needed Colin and our hangout at Pelham Park today. He taught me how to be my own compass around the city, since I'm always getting lost despite having grown up here. We didn't talk a lot about what happened last night, but we did admit that it's time to break up with our girlfriends. Sure, they shield us from events like yesterday unfolding, but we can't expect to keep leading them on to keep ourselves safe.
You better not get clingy like Nicole, Colin says while we're riding the train home. She stays hitting me up in the middle of the night when I'm trying to sleep.
Unlikely, I say, even though it's very likely. It's weirdly possessive and obsessive to like someone, You want to learn all of his stories before anyone else, and sometimes you want to be the only one who knows it all. I bump my leg into his, and he bumps mine back. If we were the typical boy and girl couple, we could kiss and hold each other, and no one would give a flying fuck. But if you're two guys like us, riding the Bronx tracks, you better make sure you hide any sign of affection if you want to fly under the radar. I've known this for the longest. I just hoped it wouldn't matter. Someone whistles at us, and I instantly knew I was wrong. These two guys, who were competing in a pull-up contest a few minutes ago, walk up to us. The taller one, with his jeans leg rolled up, asks, "Yo, you two homos faggots?" We both tell him no. His friend, who smells like straight-up armpits, presses his middle finger between Colin's eyes. He sucks his teeth. "They lying. I bet their little dicks are getting hard right now." Colin smacks the dude's hand, which is just as big a mistake as my mom trying to save me from being thrown out the house last night. Fuck you. Nightmare after nightmare. One slams my head into the railing, and the other hammers Colin with punches. I try punching the first guy in his nose, but I'm too dizzy and miss. I have no idea how many times he punches me, or at what point I end up on the sticky floor with Colin trying to shield me before he's kicked to the side. Colin turns to me, crying these involuntary tears from shock and pain. His kind brown eyes roll back when he's kicked in the head. I cry out for help, but no one fucking breaks up the fight. No one fucking does the right thing. The train stops, and the doors open, but there's no chance for escape. For us, at least. Those two guys laugh while they run out onto the platform. New passengers walk in, and some just grab a seat before there are none left. Others act like they don't see us. Only a couple of people come to our aid. But it's too late. Colin refused to go to the hospital. He said he couldn't afford it, and even though my mom could probably help him for free, he knew she would call his parents and maybe tell them everything, including that thing he never wants to share. I get home 30 minutes later, still holding my balled-up shirt to my nose to soak up the little blood coming down. I came in through the garage so I wouldn't have to pass any of my friends all fucked up like this. I limp straight to the bathroom, and the door is cracked open, lights on inside. Eric's supposed to be working at GameStop, and Mom's visiting one of her patients in prison. I open the door, and when I see who's sitting in the bathtub, I drop the shirt, and blood just spills down my face and chest. Holy shit. Dad. His eyes are open, but he's not looking at me. He didn't take his clothes off before getting into the tub. The water is a deep red, stained by the blood spilling from his slit wrists. He came home to kill himself. He came home to kill himself before I could bring a boy here. He came home to kill himself because of me. All this blood, all this red, makes me black out. My legs hurt like hell, but I don't stop running through the park. I hop onto a bench and soar off of it, landing hard on my bad leg from when I got jumped, but I keep going. I usually slow down when I'm racing Colin so he doesn't feel as bad, but not today. These pigeons eating bread from a knocked-over trash can scatter when I charge through them. I keep running, but the memory of my father dead in a bath of red keeps chasing me, and it's impossible to stop until I trip over my shoelaces and tumble into dirt. Colin catches up to me and falls to his knees, panting heavily. "You okay?" I'm shaking and ready to pound my fists on the ground like a child throwing a tantrum. He places a hand on my knee, and I lunge up and hug him so hard I pop his back. "Ouch! Shit!" he says, breaking free. "Cool it with that." I look around to see if anyone else is in the park. We're alone.
But Colin has his own ghosts, too, because of the last time I did something as simple as bumping his leg with mine. Naturally, someone would burn us at the stake if they caught us hugging. I'm sorry. It's only been 2 days, but I miss his face without the bruises and swollen eye. Colin stands, and I think he's about to help me up, but he just scratches his head. I gotta go get cleaned up before I meet up with Nicole. She wants to talk. Can you stick around for a little bit longer? I see a no forming, so I quickly say, forget it. Go do what you gotta do. And he does. Age 16. March. 4 months ago. None of us went to the funeral. There was a closed casket. I'm sure the service was poorly attended. The hated and hateful aren't exactly a popular crowd. Besides, he wouldn't have wanted me there, which made it a missed opportunity to piss on his grave. But I ended up meeting with Colin instead, and that's poetic enough for me. I'm sitting on the ground, and Colin is pacing back and forth. He still hasn't really offered any real condolences, or even hugged me, and it's starting to get to me. He did this because of me, I tell Colin, even though I've told him this over and over already. Because of what we do together. Maybe we should take a break, Colin says. Some time apart could be good for you. That's the last thing I want right now. I don't add the obvious, that we just got jumped together, and my father killed himself. We need to talk to the girls soon. I need you, I need us, to figure this out. I can't have something else going wrong right now. This is shitty timing, I know. But I actually can't break up with Nicole, Aaron. Everything between us has been a slip. Look at everything that's happened to you alone. You get why nothing else can go down between us, right? This is one of those times where you swear you have to be sleeping and living a nightmare because it's so impossible that your life can only be a string of bad things until you're completely abandoned. You can't do this, I say. I told my mother about you. My father killed himself because of us. We got jumped on the train because of who we are. Colin keeps pacing and refuses to look me in the eye. We chose to be the wrong people. It just can't work. Nicole's pregnant. And I was trying to talk her into not keeping the kid before I told you. But she is. So I gotta be a man again. Another bad thing. But not unexpected. That was always a risk. So you knocked her up, whatever. That doesn't make you straight, and you're never going to be. It's not happening, Aaron. He walks to the fence. I expect him to come back, like he's still pacing, but he just crouches down and leaves without another word. Something snaps in my head, and I'm fighting back tears. I slipped, too. Whatever. I have a girlfriend, too. I don't need him. Age 16. April. 3 months ago. I know Dad killed himself because of me. Mom thinks that his recent jail stint tipped him over the edge, that his many chemical imbalances caught up with him. Now I keep searching for happiness so I don't end up like he did. I learn about this town called Happy in Texas and think about how that must be the greatest place to live. I teach myself how to say and read and write happy in Spanish, German, Italian, and even Japanese. But I would have to draw that last one out. I discover the happiest animal in the world, the cuoca. He's a cheeky little bastard that's always smiling. But it's not enough. The memories are still rattling around my head, twisting into me like a knife. I don't want to wait around to see what comes next for me in this tragic story I'm living. I open up one of my father's unused razors and cut into my wrist. Like he did. slit in a curve until it smiles, so everyone will know I died for happiness. I was expecting relief, but instead, it's the saddest pain I've ever experienced. I never once stopped feeling empty or unworthy of anyone's rescue. Not even when the thin line on my wrist makes everything go red. I don't want to die. And I didn't. I spent a few days at the hospital, where I met with this therapist, Dr. Slattery, who was the worst. I thought it was just me who couldn't stand him, but I read his reviews online and saw I wasn't the only one who thought the man was a joke. Dr. Slattery drove me crazier. Dr. Slattery wouldn't shut up about his own problems, and on and on. Genevieve is taking much better care of me than that clown did. My mom finally let me out from under her watch, and Eric's watch, too, both of them missing a lot of work as I stayed home from school. They let me out to celebrate my one-year anniversary with Genevieve. She must have thought we'd run around the city having fun to keep my mind off of things, but instead, I'm stretched out on her couch, crying, with my head on her lap because of all the pain I can't reach. Pain someone else can remove. I don't see how a Lateo procedure would really help you, Genevieve says. When my mother died, it was brutal, and... She doesn't understand. She didn't have to find whatever was left of her mother's body on the plane's crash site, like I had to find my father dead in the bathtub. I would forget finding him. That's gotta be fucked up enough for Lateo to scrub out. Yeah, Genevieve says, crying too. It's gotta be. The TV's volume is raised high so Genevieve's dad can't hear me cry. I'm not embarrassed, but I think it makes him uncomfortable. A commercial for this new movie, The Final Chase, comes on, and it's like a punch in the gut when I think about all the new movies I won't see with Colin, all the comics we won't read together, and how he's basically acting like I never happened. He's undoing himself, and I need to do the same. Age 16. May. 2 months ago. After an hour with Dr. Slattery, where I cried and cried out of frustration, I decide I want to spend some time outside, even if it means my mom has to sit out here with me. There's a moving truck parked in front of Building 135. When I go to check out the new neighbor, I see Kyle wheeling a shopping cart of boxes into the back of the truck. I still half expect to find Kenneth right behind him, minding his own business. One of the boxes falls out of the shopping cart. I pick it up and hand it over to Kyle, who won't look me in the eyes. Going somewhere? Kyle nods and drops the box into the truck. Where? Doesn't matter. Just can't be here anymore. Brendan, Baby Freddy, Nolan, and Fat Dave all come over. Brendan nods at me while everyone else looks at my bandaged wrist. He looks into the truck, sits down on the ramp, and asks, "What's up, guys?" "Kyle's moving," I say, throwing him under the bus because I'd really like an afternoon off from talking about my problems. "He won't tell me where." "Because where I'm fucking going doesn't fucking matter. I can't go to Good Foods anymore without Mohad calling me Kenneth. I can't play Skelsies with you guys without making tops for Kenneth he'll never use. I can't even look at you, Aaron, because you get to live after trying to throw away your life, and meanwhile Kenneth is nothing but bones by this point." Kyle's parents come out of the lobby, and he snatches a box from his mother and throws it over Brendan's head into the truck. We hear something shatter. "Just forget about me." He heads back into the building, and we all go into the third court before he comes back out. Baby Freddy says, "That was awkward." Brendan shrugs. He turns to me and says, "You good?" I nod, though really I feel like shit. "That Colin kid coming to check on you?" "No, and I don't want him to," I say,
and we all drop it. Brendan even pats me on the back. We hang out for a bit, like I never stopped being part of the crew. But then my mom calls me over, and I run over, ready to argue for more time to stay out.
"Dr. Slattery called," Mom says, still clutching the phone in her hand.
"Is he giving us all the money back you've wasted on him?"
"He knows someone at Leteo."
Her eyes are closed, like she can't face me.
"He's spoken with this woman, Dr. Castle or someone, and he'd like to refer us to her to discuss possibilities."
Holy shit. I look back at my friends. I know how to make everything right so they'll never hate me again. I think about how I won't have to think about Colin anymore. I want to do it.
Age 16. June. 1 month ago. It only took one session with Dr. Evangeline Castle for me to admit the root of my problems. My liking guys. She still made me sit through some sessions before approving me for the procedure, but the day is finally here. Mom can't come with me because she's missed too much work after everything, and her boss's sympathy could only go so far. Someone has to pay for our apartment and this procedure after all, but at least I'll have Genevieve with me.
"You're going to be okay, my son."
She once promised me that nothing bad would ever happen. And then I grew up, and everything went wrong. But I believe her this time, because the worst thing that can happen is that nothing will happen at all. I know.
"Aaron, you understand I'm signing off on this procedure for you, right? It's not because I want to change you, or think you need changing. I believe this will be a fresh start for all of us. I really want my son back. The boy who didn't hurt my heart by using Genevieve and didn't try to leave me."
She keeps hugging me, and what she says stings. Luckily, I won't ever have to remember being a complete disappointment to her and my father.
Age 16. June 18th. I trace the smiling scar, and I feel like mirroring it.
I'm insanely happy.
I qualify for the memory relief procedure. The operation is scary sounding and pretty extreme. It is experimental brain work after all, and the doctors are cautious about administering it to those under the age of 21. But I'm a danger to myself, so they're letting me shake the old ways and days out of my head. The waiting room is crowded like usual. The complete opposite of the hospital where I saw Dr. Slattery. People aren't exactly lining up outside for hours to meet with him. But at least the guy got us a pretty big discount with his referral. Silver lining. Genevieve won't stop shaking her leg. She can't keep her hand still. It's partly why I wanted to do this solo, but she and my mom wouldn't take no for an answer. I consider reading something from the table littered with mental health magazines and booklets and forms, but I know all I need to know already. They turn away potential clients who only want a procedure to forget spoilers of Game of Thrones or someone who broke their heart. But this isn't that movie. Leteo helps people who hurt themselves because of harmful memories. You won't die from heartbreak, but you'll die from... well, killing yourself. Like this elderly Hispanic guy who won't stop reciting the winning lottery numbers he lost to. He'll likely get sent home without a chance to forget. I recognize some of the patients from the group therapy sessions they forced me to attend, just to see if time was enough to resolve my problems. Fun fact, sitting through those sessions only made me want to hurt myself even more. A middle-aged woman banshee wails from her seat, rocks back and forth, and punches the wall. An orderly rushes to her aid and tries calming her down. I know who she is. Not her name or anything, but she's constantly reliving the memory of her 5-year-old daughter chasing a bird into a busy street. And yeah, it's pretty fill-in-the-blank from there. I try to keep my eyes low and ignore her screams.
but I can't help but look up when another orderly approaches with a straitjacket. They carry her away through the same door I'm about to walk through. I wonder how much of her life she'll have to forget to live without a straitjacket, and maybe a muzzle if she doesn't keep it down. The waiting room is silent now. Any chatter has stopped. Lives depend on this procedure. This really obese dude, Miguel, I think, told our therapy group that he could stop overeating only after he forgets his childhood traumas. He's here now, the ketchup stain of his last meal on his shirt. I almost want to hug him. I hope he's deemed unfit enough to get the procedure so he can be healthy again. Physically and mentally. Like him, I'm here because I don't want to be who I am anymore. I want to be so happy that bad memories aren't following me around like unwanted shadows. Dr. Castle encouraged me to give her a list of happy things I should think about whenever I started thinking about things I shouldn't. During sessions, I always faked smiles while unhappily answering because she was so nice. She was trying to help. I hold Genevieve's hand to calm her down, which seems pretty backward if you ask me. There's blue and orange paint crusting around her fingernails. "What were you working on?" I ask her. "Nothing good. I was playing around with that idea I was telling you about, the one with the sun drowning in the ocean instead of setting behind it. I didn't know how to finish it, though." I have no idea what she's talking about. Not surprised. She reaches across me and stops me from tugging at my sleeve, which I didn't even realize I was doing. She knows all my signs, and I can't even pay attention to her when she talks. "You're going to be okay, babe. You have to be." Empty promise. No one ever thinks they'll get cancer. No one expects a gunman to open fire at the bank. I'm more nervous that nothing will happen instead of something going wrong. Some of the risks include severe memory loss, anterograde amnesia, and other shit like that. But a small part of me thinks I would be better off brain dead than waking up the way I am. Genevieve looks around the waiting room with its stark white walls and crazies and patient employees. I bet she would consider painting something Lateo-related if it weren't for the signed non-disclosure agreement that allows her to be with me today, provided she never discuss her presence here with another human being unless she wants to pay a zillion-dollar fine. "I wouldn't worry," she says. "We read through all those brochures 1,000 times and watched a marathon's worth of post-op videos, and everyone seems fine." "Yeah, but they probably wouldn't show us the patients who have to be spoon-fed for the rest of their lives." I fake a grin for her. I'm tired of faking, which is ridiculous considering the circumstances about to unfold. But at least I won't know I'm faking. And that's honest enough for me. Genevieve looks behind me and immediately tears up. I turn. Dr. Castle is standing by the door. Her sunken-in, sea-green eyes are always kind of comforting. Even now as she stares at me, but her tousled mass of red-orange hair reminds me of living flames. I fight back panic. She probably hasn't announced herself, so I could have a few more minutes with Genevieve. Maybe even myself. I pick up Genevieve by her waist and spin her around a couple of times. Getting dizzy before someone plays with my brain is stupid, I know. Before I can ask, Genevieve holds my hand and says, "I'll walk with you." The closer we get to Dr. Castle, the more it feels like I'm marching to my death. And I know I sort of am. At least the part of me everyone is better off without. The panic melts away. "I'm ready," I tell Dr. Castle, with zero doubts. I turn back to Genevieve, and while I'm kissing the girl who has been keeping my secret without knowing it, I wonder again if maybe she's known all along. We've never gone as far as saying we love each other in the year we've been together. It's simple, I know,
but she's smart enough to never admit loving someone who can't love her back. I never thought I would say anything like this to her, that I would rather hold this secret in my tight fist until the day I die. But I go ahead.